Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio. Well, hello, everybody. We welcome you back to CUTV News Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn, your host. It's, as I always say, it's nice to have you with us. As you know by now, those of you who hear the broadcast that I do, I love talking to unique individuals who are into different things in one way or another. I really find it fascinating to hear different points of view, and especially people who do unique things. We have such a guest on our line with us today, and I think it's going to be a fascinating subject. We're going to talk to a rather unique psychologist, a therapist. He's a lot of things. He's quite a lot of things. He's also one who points out to you if you're struggling with anxiety, or anger, if you have depression, if you have relationship issues or any other kind of mental, emotional, or spiritual, ethical difficulty, he is someone who might be able to help you. He's the director of Moonlight Counseling, which is located in Solana Beach, California. That's down in the San Diego area where it's always a beautiful day in San Diego, one of the best climates in the country. I think you're going to find him pretty doggone fascinating because he offers what is described as an eclectic integration of Eastern and Western psychology. And as a psychology in private practice for some 40 years now, he is a longtime practitioner and teacher of Eastern meditative approaches, I'll get it, with a Carl Jung orientation as a psychotherapist. As he describes himself, he is a mystic who lives in modern times. He also happens to be a Buddhist practitioner, and he studied Eastern philosophy since he was a teenager. Now, he was a guest here on our microphones a week ago. You may have heard him. And if you did, you know what I'm talking about, how unique he is. One of the more interesting things, fascinating things about him, which has really had a major impact on his life, he studied at the California Institute of Asian Studies, and he was introduced there to tarot, playing cards commonly associated with fortune-telling. You've heard of tarot readers. Well, Dr. Rosengarten was much more interested in exploring the tarot cards from the perspective of a psychologist, and he went on to write the first doctoral dissertation on the tarot, comparing it with dream analysis and projective storytellings. As he puts it, he immediately saw the symbols could have an incredible value in psychotherapy. He says you have these rich, ambiguous images that are psychological in nature. And he's gone on to write several books on the subject of the tarot. And he has a brand new one that's almost finished and it's going to be coming out soon, and we're going to talk about that. But I want to bring him on now to talk a little bit about his practice as a psychologist. For those of you who did not hear that previous broadcast, let's welcome Dr. Art Rosengarten back to our mics. Dr. Rosengarten, nice to have you with us. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Doug. It's delightful to be here with you and your audience.
Do me a favor. You're going to have to repeat a little bit of what you may have said last week, but that's okay. When you describe mm-hmm. yourself as a mystic in modern times, what do you really mean by that? It's great. It's a great tagline.
Sure.
What does it mean?
Well, it means I'm interested in consciousness, and I'm interested in what we could call higher or deeper levels of consciousness. And that really entails mysticism in a certain way, in that we change the way we look at things and think about things, tuning in more to a spiritual dimension. So that's what I meant by that.
I understand that. Well, you know, among the things that you specialize in, I know you do counseling services for individuals. You also do it for couples as well. You help people who are going through life transitions, relationship transitions. folks who are suffering from depression or anxiety, also addiction and recovery issues. These are you know, pretty heavy subjects. I'm wondering how your approach differs from what another practitioner might use to help these kind of clients.
I understand your question. At first, it might not differ at all. There are certain basic things that all therapists use and find to be helpful for people, and I'm well-trained in those sorts of things as well. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I think it's just a different context or a different place that I come from. In many of our mainstream psychotherapies come from a similar place. I mean, you look at, say, AA, which has the basic idea of turning it over to a higher power. That's mm-hmm. a fairly well-accepted idea in psychotherapy. Another would be self-acceptance and being in the present moment, being in the now. These are all very rich and deep spiritual concepts that have now kind of entered into mainstream psychotherapy. Another would be mindfulness, which now has become mainstream. I've been practicing something called mindfulness, which is a Buddhist-based technique of meditation that's just about becoming more aware of what's going on in your mind in the present moment and not following it, just noting it as a thought or a feeling, say, and refocusing onto your breathing. Now, that mindfulness, for instance, is now one of the premier therapies for working with anxiety and depression. It's all based on awareness, and I would say that's pretty much a good word about what the type of work I do is. It's awareness.
When you use that term connected with mindfulness, now I'm not very familiar with mindfulness. What do you do with it when you're doing that?
Okay. The way I often teach it is I encourage people when they are just sitting maybe for 5 minutes, noting their breathing and getting quiet. They will become aware very quickly of all kinds of thoughts that are constantly going through the mind stream. Some are relevant thoughts, some are just random, irrelevant noise. And we tend to get distracted very, very easily by the noise that's going on in our minds. The basic approach of mindfulness says, don't feed it, don't deny it, just note it, and refocus onto the next moment, onto the next breath. So it's a way of dismantling or stopping the snowballing effect of the mind, which is a real problem, actually. Much of our suffering, much of our difficulty has to do with runaway thoughts and runaway emotions that where we kind of lose ourselves.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So if I were to come to you as a client and came in for a session, how would it begin with you? How do you start?
What brings you to therapy today? What brings you? And I would basically just want to listen as best as I could to really get a sense of what it feels like in your shoes, how you see things, without any kind of judgment or interpretation, just more curiosity and kind of a supportive, caring manner. And until the first phase of psychotherapy, and I think this is generally agreed upon now, is the relationship itself. It's forming a safe, trusting, caring relationship with the client. Without any interpretations, without any advice, without any judgments. So this is very standard in psychotherapy. Any good therapist would approach a client this way, and I do it as well.
I was going to ask you, and maybe we can get into it a little bit later on, if you could give me some examples of what I call success stories of clients who've come to you for one issue or another. You know, it doesn't matter.
So many things
you treat that after working with you for a while in these what might be considered unusual kinds of therapies that you use, how it worked out for them, and if they went on to success.
The example that comes to mind is I actually wrote about it in my first book, Tarot and Psychology, because it's rather humorous, I think. I had a couple. She was a very dynamic, strong, successful recovering alcoholic. And her fiancé was a lovely fellow, very warm and likable, but he'd been married 5 times. And he, too, was a recovering drug addict.
Okay.
He has had a vasectomy, and she very much wanted to have children. And they were just crazy about each other, but, my God, on paper, the track record did not look good.
No.
So he just in one session, actually, with them, I had worked with her before in counseling. I gave them a tarot card reading, the way I do tarot. It's really very psychologically oriented. We'll pick some tarot cards, and I'll share a little bit about what they are kind of about, and then I'll encourage them to associate with it and see how it stacks up in the issues we're talking about. And it was very, very powerful, and it basically the question was, should we get married with all of our stuff? And the tarot reading came out, and it doesn't necessarily always tell you what you want to hear at all, but the tarot reading came out and basically strongly said yes, but with specific pieces of advice. I can't remember the specifics right now. And they kind of left the session, very, 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 very inflated, very excited, and they decided, what the heck, we're going to do it. So they got married.
Okay.
Remember the track record.
Right.
I never heard from them for about 12 years, and then I got a call. This was this year from the woman. Who came in just for kind of a check-in visit and said, we've been married all this time. We're happier than we've ever been. You know, we've had a lot of ups and downs, but we've worked through it. And we still think about, the basic reading that you gave us and the principles that we discussed. And we're tremendously grateful to you for doing that and for bringing that positive possibility to us. So there's an example.
Wow. So they made it. They're still going strong. How about that?
Going strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being married 5 times before getting married again, that's not a very good sign, you know. But
no,
well, good.
No.
Congratulations for them. You know, you refer to the tarot a lot. A lot of people who listen to this may not know anything about tarot or tarot card reading. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I think, consider it just a form of, fortune telling. Tell me a little bit about the tarot and what got you so involved. You've really gotten hooked on it. I mean, you write it. You have a new book coming out. We'll talk about that. What attracted your interest?
First place, it's generally misunderstood even by people that read tarot cards. Most of them are not truly tarotists, I'm sorry to say.
Right.
But the tarot itself is a 15th century Renaissance art form. Nobody knows the origin. It's still a mystery. That emerged in northern Italy and then kind of passed all around Western Europe in the 1400s. But this was the age of the Italian Renaissance, which is a very golden and amazing time in history. People don't realize that it was a period of time where the ancient world finally opened up and people... that a lot of the ancient Greek philosophers were for the first time translated into Latin. And it was a time, it was kind of a little bit like the American 60s, but much more so, where there was a, kind of an opening up of a sense of the individual and freedom and connection with other parts of the world, you know, through trade and through the arts, etc. It was a very exciting period, and in that period, a lot of the ancient mystery school teachings coming out of Plato, really, and the pre-Socratic philosophers started coming into the kind of mainstream. It was quite a fascinating time. In that mix, the tarot deck came in first, mostly with the aristocracy, who would use these cards more as a game. They were beautiful, and they'd have all these artisans creating these beautiful decks. But as it evolved, it took on a deeper, more serious level, moving mostly to France, where the metaphysical philosophers saw in the tarot that it was a deep, it was a map of deep wisdom teachings from the ancient world. And from that period, from the 1700s, through it kind of continued to evolve, and right at the beginning of the 20th century, it became very strong in England with a group called the Society of the Golden Dawn, which drew a lot of the intellectuals of the turn of that century, you know, William Butler Yeats and George Bernard Shaw and a lot of theater people, and also serious occultists. And so it took a very occult kind of turn at that point. And I don't consider myself particularly into the occult per se, but as it continued to grow in the 20th century, the really the influence of the great Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung became really he brought in a whole new level of working with the tarot, where it became more symbols of the unconscious, not unlike dreams, that carried the archetypes, and that all people had, and in the archetypes there really were believed to be, at least, the blueprints of the human mind and the human mind's potential for completion, for completing almost a script that's hardwired into the brain in terms of unfolding consciousness. So at that point, that's where my interest came in, because I was interested in the evolution of consciousness.
Wow, that's quite a story. Well, yes. I know you've gotten heavily involved in it. You've written books on the subject. One of them is called Tarot and Psychology, and that's how you got the two kind of connected. I know you also teach this. You have something called the Tarot Circle, am I right?
Yes. I've been teaching the tarot for 25 years.
Goodness. That's mm-hmm. I need to talk to you. By the way, I want to point out our guest is Dr. Art Rosengarten. You have a really magnificent website, and it's moonlightcounseling.com. If you want to read more about Dr. Rosengarten and his practice and learn about him and learn how to get in touch with him, it's moonlightcounseling.com. Very simple, just like it sounds, moonlightcounseling.com. Tell me about the book that you're working on right now that you said is going to be coming out relatively soon,
yes,
that you're almost finished, Tarot of the Future. You've made changes in the tarot, right?
Well, I have. And it's a little bit technical, though tarotists will understand, but for the longest time, it became very clear to me that five cards were missing from the deck. And, you know, if we had time, I could sit down and demonstrate to you clearly why that is so. But take it on faith. And after much thought and discovery with it, it occurred to me that these were the emerging archetypes of our time that hadn't arrived yet, so to speak. in the consciousness of this Renaissance-based tool. You know, Joseph Campbell, I'm not sure if you're familiar, he was a great genius and professor of classical mythology, quite well known. He had a beautiful statement talking about the archetypes that are emerging that have yet to come into full consciousness. And one example that he gave was Earth as seen from space by the astronauts. He has a picture of an astronaut kind of flying out there with the circling planet Earth in the back. And his point was that until really the 20th century space program, that notion, that perspective was unconscious in all of humanity. It was impossible. It could not have been articulated consciously because we had never had the experience. It could only come out mythologically and imaginally. But with the advent of history and progress, as the world continues to evolve, new deep themes start emerging into the collective consciousness. One would be, you know, as I said, Earth as seen from space. That's a whole new perspective. Now, with my deck, which is called Tarot of the Nine Paths, and the book that I've written now, Tarot of the Future, it's really a much deeper discussion about the deck, Tarot of the Nine Paths, in which I brought in, I would say I channeled these five, what I believe to be, emerging new archetypes of the tarot. And quite simply, I can just tell you what they are.
Sure.
What you should know is that these are not just ideas that came to me, but they were derived from actually a hidden code, a numerological code that is embedded in the deck, which became clearer and clearer to me, explains how the whole deck is held together. And so I used that code, which I call the Hermit Effect. And from that process, the five new cards that emerge, I've given them names and numbers and images, but it's the archetype that's themselves that I think is important. They can be expressed in many different forms, even different names, but the underlying archetype itself, that's the important piece. The first one I call the Well, which is an agent of renewal or renaissance or rebirth. The second of the new five is called the River, and that is an agent of flow, also impermanence, and really the whole principle of it's like the Eastern principle of Tao or Taoism. Then the third card that emerged from this process, I call the Ring. And none of these have ever existed in the tarot before, but they're universal symbols that basically are relevant to all cultures across the board. The Ring is an agent of wholeness. That's another emerging new archetypal idea. The fourth of the new ones, I call the Dragon, one of the oldest and most universal symbols. And the Dragon is an agent of initiation.
Okay.
It's another level of initiation. And finally, the fifth card, I call the Great Web. And the Great Web includes the World Wide Web, but it's more the Great Web interconnecting everything with everything else, how everything is interdependent in not just in our own lives, but in the entire universe. Everything co-arises and is interdependent in terms of a great web. This is a age-old Indian Hindu idea called Indra's net, and But we certainly see it verified in like new physics and certainly in popular culture with the internet. So those are the five good cards.
That's all fascinating. I gather with your knowledge and use of the tarot, and I see you do tarot reading. Do you do readings for your clients when they come? Is that part of what you do typically?
Oh, yes.
I was going to ask, what do you get out of a tarot card reading? Give me an idea of what one learns.
Well, the two things that the way I've come to see it is a tarot reading does two things. It either what I call possibilizes or diaphanizes. By diaphanizes, I mean it makes what you suspect or kind of feel transparent and totally clear. It confirms it, and you may be feeling like, I don't know if I really should stay on the job. And then all of a sudden you get a card, and the card says, you really ought to consider leaving the job. You say, well, I was thinking that. The card diaphanizes. It makes these kind of feelings, these vague feelings that we have, it brings them out and it confirms them. The other thing it does is possibilizes. It shows you possibilities of actions or choices that come from outside of your normal frame of reference, which is an ego-based rational thought process. So it brings into your field of awareness possibilities that you're not going to get yourself because you're limited by your own blind spots and biases. So that's what a tarot reading can do. It can do either make things transparent that are kind of unclear, or it can show you new ways of looking.
Well, I think, quite frankly, one would have to kind of experience this to see how beneficial and it is and what you can really learn out of it. If it's one thing talking about it, but seeing it and exploring and experiencing it is something totally different. And I know you do this. You do this on Skype for clients?
I do.
Obviously
I do.
In person. It just sounds
pretty
fascinating.
I do it over the phone. I do it on Skype.
Really?
Or in person. Yep, and it. You know what? I always worried, would it be the same doing it even on the phone? It pretty much is. It works very, very well if it's live. And Skype is even better, and, of course, face-to-face is the best.
All the questions that I have there are bumming around in my head about to ask you, how much of these methods that you use do you think are responsible for bringing clients to your door? Do you think they come to you because you are so unique and you offer these various modalities that
no.
really most psychologists don't? They don't know anything about it.
I don't think so.
Right.
Because I don't... I think most people some certainly come to my classes for that and come to my lectures and things like that. But my average client is your average nut and bolts person that's suffering in their lives and their relationships and where they may be anxious or depressed, and they're just like any other client. And often, I would say the majority of the time, I don't even bring up tarot. They don't know anything about that part of my work. I would only bring that this into our work at a time after the therapeutic alliance had been established, and we had tried our best to work out some things first in the normal way, talking it out, exploring, et cetera. And I might just at a certain time say, we might try a reading sometime with these with tarot. It can be
Doctor,
really helpful.
I hate to interrupt you, but we've run out of time here. You got across what I wanted you to get across. That really, at some point or another, you'll open these issues up and people can experience them. It's kind of fascinating talking to you. Our guest has been Dr. Art Rosengarten. He's the manager. He owns Moonlight Counseling in Solana Beach, California. It's down near San Diego, and if you go to his website, moonlightcounseling.com, you can find out much more information about him. I would encourage you to do it, because his is a great story, to say the least. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us. It's been great having you as a guest. Okay?
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. Thank you very much. That's it for now, everybody. Have a great day. Bye.